Here at Ritual, we know that a mother's support isn't limited to one day a year, and we believe that yours shouldn't be either. So this Mother's Day, we're honoring the world's biggest supporters with science-backed daily rituals that center you not just today, but every day. Whether you're thinking about motherhood, actively trying, or already there, we've got you covered for when it matters most. From fertility support and natal choline to our best-selling clinically-backed prenatal multivitamin, know that you're getting clean, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms. Because let's be honest, you don't have time for guesswork. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
So welcome to episode 8 of season 5. If you've just joined, this is Maria from at Maria the Arcane everywhere. And I'm joined by the lovely, amazing, our supreme goddess, Robin, at a tired witch.
I like being a goddess.
Of course. But we just wanted to mention that our class this month is with Corey Hutchinson, and it's going to be on American folk magic. Corey, like, was the author of New World Witchery, and he's, like,
and
a really great
host.
Yes, and is an amazing storyteller. So you guys are in for a treat for those who are attending the class. And you can do so on our Patreon. It's library tier and up. And then also you can join on Eventbrite if, like, joining a subscription thing is just not your, like,
cup of tea.
Yeah, but it is on Eventbrite for you.
Yeah, that's going to be on May 21st, and that is for the library tier and up, so we hope to see you there.
Mm-hmm.
As a reminder, if you guys would like to be featured on our Coffee Talk episodes, don't forget to call us and leave a voicemail at our phone number 351-207-0799, or you can shoot us an email at submissions@coffeeandcauldrons.com, or head to our website, coffeeandcauldrons.com, and fill it out via our submission form. It is whatever works best for you. We love hearing your stories. So please keep sending them to us. We still have a whole bunch of written ones to get through.
Which is pretty good. I'm very excited.
Yeah, very, very good. We're very excited. Before we get into this episode too much, we are going to be joined by a guest today. Her name is Samantha, and she's going to talk to us about mythology misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. But before we get too deep into this episode, we do want to give you guys a trigger warning that later in this episode, when we are talking about these things, they are going to involve topics of SA. Mm-hmm. And so just giving you guys that warning. We will also remind you again when we're at the tarot section that the next segment is going to cover that. So if that is something that is triggersome to you, as well as violence is another thing that we are mm-hmm. going to talk about, feel free to skip.
Yeah.
We don't want anybody to be triggered.
Yeah. And if you guys know Greek mythology, it's all triggering.
Yeah, it's all very aggressive.
Very aggressive.
So this might not be an episode for you if that is a topic that is one of your triggers. So feel free to skip over it. We won't be offended. Protect yourself. If you just joined us this week, every week we talk about upcoming lunar phases and how you can utilize those in your magical practice. Now that being said, the nearest one to us when this day comes out will be on May 23rd. That is the full moon in Sagittarius. And I'm trying to not say I really like
Here,
this
I'll
moon
say it for
every
you.
Time.
I'll say it for you. This moon is the best moon, and I will tell you why. Because my moon is in Sagittarius, so there you go.
I'm it's trying really moon. Hard to stop saying that, because it was pointed out to me and they're totally right. I do say it every time. But I do like most of the moons. There are a few mm-hmm. of them that I'm not crazy about, and we did talk mm-hmm. about that in the Discord. But yeah, I'm trying to stop saying that. So that being said, the full moon in Sagittarius is a great one because it is a very optimistic moon, right? Mm-hmm. They're adventurous, they're fun, it's all about play. And when we're looking at this in terms of the full moon in Sagittarius, we also have like the full moon. So it's our full potential, our full power. And this is a great time to utilize magic that is fun, that is optimistic, that is, you know, firesome and adventurous. Mm-hmm. If you are somebody that is trying to perhaps go on a big holiday and there's goals that you need to achieve, this is a great moon to kind of get us with our inspiration going so that way we can hit these goals and have fun. It's mm-hmm. also a silly and playful moon. So we can look at things like kind of rituals that have no end goal of quote manifesting. Instead, it's like sex magic just for the ritual act of it. Mm-hmm. It is getting out into nature and being a part of it and having kind of these rituals or meditations or similar that don't really have a goal, but instead are just fun and about connecting. Mm-hmm. If you are somebody who works, let's say, with nature spirits, land spirits, etc., maybe this is a really good time to go dip in the water and just have fun with the spirits and environment around you. Mm-hmm. Sagittarius full moons are great for things that are, you know, optimistic and fun, but they're also really good just for that connection and having fun with our spirits, with our environment, etc.
Mm-hmm.
How would you use it?
I really like Sagittarius for getting out of like comfort zones, like and going and doing something like completely new. That's, you know, you kind of like sit on some stuff. You're like, no, I shouldn't do that. It's not really, you know, I don't deserve it. It's not worth my time because it doesn't make great use of it. But, you know, you secretly, it's like that passion that you really want to explore and do.
Yeah.
And this is a great moon to like lay the groundwork to just like going for it. Like, absolutely just going for it. And as you said about play and stuff like that, I do 100% agree. I think Sagittarius is a great moon to connect to your inner child and experience play and having fun for the sake of having fun.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like stepping into the sun in tarot or like in judgment in tarot, where you're just kind of like, this is who I am. And, you know, fuck it. I want to be happy and I want to do things that make me happy. And, you know, only like children do that like so easily. But mm-hmm. us as adults, we're like, no, it's too hard. But we're worth it. And we're worth exploring that. And having a Sagittarius moon, I can tell you 100% that we're huge travel bugs. Like, we are escapists. Like, just going on, like, adventures and traveling all the time is, like, the dream. Like, the dream. So, planning trips, putting intentions towards a trip that you want to take. If that means doing a financial spell for it, go for it. I mean, but yeah, I like this moon. This is my favorite moon.
I'm trying so hard to stop saying it. But I do think that this moon is a really good reminder that witchcraft is not about manifesting all the time. You know, I first of all, you know, I don't like that word manifesting, but regardless, it's not always about, you know, manifesting or working towards things. Sometimes there is just that ritual act of ritual, right? Of doing, of existing within a magical environment. And I think this is a really good moon for that. It's a really good moon to have fun for having fun's sake and connecting for connecting's sake. So
absolutely. So every episode we go over some tarot stuff. Like previous seasons, we've gone over like individual meanings of cards. And then like last year, we went over like the sections in tarot, like the aces, the minor arcana, the major, the kings, the queens, like all of that. It was a lot of fun. But
it was this season,
this season we're exploring themes, like choosing a theme and thinking about cards that we see in readings pop up for said theme. So this week we decided to do things that are not as they seem. Which I think really goes well.
Michael, tricks are for whores. No, I'm just kidding. That was an Arrested Development reference for those who don't get it. Sorry, I am chronically a millennial. Anyway.
I think our whole podcast is about being chronically millennial, but a witch.
I'm sorry. I am sorry. That just came out of me. Anyway.
But, so, the first card that I picked was the Seven of Cups. I mean, obviously, like, this card is, like, a dreamscape. Like, we see, you know, seven clouds. Well, not seven clouds, but seven clouds and with cups in them with, like, things poking out of the cups. And whenever when this pops up, it always shows like dreaming of options, and it's really easy to get caught up like in all these options and to think that they're super viable and that they're worth your time and attention. And, you know, kind of like to talk yourself into going after like the one that like you're most super excited about, but that's the whole, like, things are not as they seem. And I always say to my clients, like, when this card pops up, you have to make like a pro and cons list about like all these options that you're going over in your head, because some of these will not work out, and it could like lead to loss of happiness. It can lead to loss of finances. It can lead to a lot of like hardship if you keep following through with something that is not actually viable. It's great to dream and to have aspirations, 100%, 100%, but you don't want to put your time and effort into something that's just going to not work out for you. And then the next card I picked is the Five of Cups. Especially when this card is upright in a negative spot for me, it shows being stuck on just viewing the unhappiness and being stuck on mourning and not being able to move forward. It's usually a point like where someone, where I'm like, you need to go seek, you know, help and to, you know, talk out your feelings and stuff with some, you know, with someone who cares. Because staying in this space where all you're seeing is this unhappiness and being stuck in the past of what did not work out, you're not seeing the stuff that is working out, the happiness that you still have. And I find that when people get stuck in this space, that negative space does start affecting the stuff that they still have, like, they can experience happiness towards that, like they can still find love and emotional fulfillment towards. And so, you know, it's just being aware of when you're stuck into that cycle and when it's time to, like, maybe it's time to go get some help.
Move past it.
Yeah. And then, like, I know, like, this card might not seem this way, but I see it. I see a lot.
The title is misleading.
Yes, the Lovers. Like, I see this a lot when people have a very romanticized view of something that they want, whether that be a person or situation, like, you know, a job or anything like that. And they're like, oh, it's going to be wonderful. Let's speak it in like a way of someone talking about a spouse where all, you know, they love their spouse. They think the sun shines out their butt, but they do know that they're having problems, you know, within the relationship. And they're just like, they're doing all the work to make it work because they love their spouse so much, but their spouse is not putting that equal amount of effort in. So it's kind of like, if you want it to work out, you're going to have to meet in the middle. And you doing all the work and thinking that it is working out is that romanticized view that is going to ruin everything. And it can be that way for a job too. Because if you're putting so much love and effort into a job that you are doing, and that job is like, treats you like a shit employee, even though you're a great employee, you know, like, you're not going to be getting very far on your trek up, you know, the work pyramid or whatever it is, the work ladder. But it's kind of like, allow yourself to view these things unromantically, because they're actually causing you more hurt and pain than it's worth all the love you're experiencing for it. Okay, how about you?
My first one is, I feel very obvious. I felt like I was surprised you didn't pick this one, and that was the moon. The moon literally
actually,
speaks
this card very differently. Remember,
fair
very
enough. Differently. Fair enough. Yeah. The moon is a card of illusion. The moon mm-hmm. is, you know, when we see things under moonlight, shadows look scary. They look terrifying. The moon is a reminder that that pile of laundry in the corner of your room is not a stalker serial killer there to end you. But instead it's a pile of laundry. And it's a card that talks about the fact that maybe we should focus this stuff in the light of day. Let's not mm-hmm. spend our nights ruminating. Let's not start looking for pitfalls that aren't there, et cetera, et cetera. My next two cards are both reversals. So the next one is the Three of Cups reversed. Upright, we see this card of people jovial, they're dancing, they're having a good time. But in reverse, it asks us to take a closer look. First of all, we have a whole figure we can't see the face of. So what's going on there? Mm-hmm. It is a card of the fact that the people that we might be enjoying our time with mm-hmm. Don't actually have our best interest at heart. And so mm-hmm. We need to take a critical look at the situation. We need to examine maybe with a step back as to who we're spending our time with and their intentions there. Because sometimes like when you're at a party, let's say, mm-hmm. And you're having a really good time, it's easy to overlook things, right? Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, if we're taking this card from a very literal perspective of drinking alcohol or, you know, partaking in adult activities, mm-hmm. Our judgment might be a little bit clouded and we might be viewing people with a little bit more rose-tinted glasses than they deserve. Mm-hmm. And the next one that I picked is the Six of Cups reverse, which is a lot like, in my opinion, the Five of Cups, mm-hmm. because we are focusing on the past and we're focusing on things that had happened. And if you take, let's say, a relationship, for example, and you have broken up with a person and you're looking back on it and we're looking at only the positives of that past, it's easy to forget the reasons why a relationship maybe hadn't worked out. And that doesn't just mean romantic. That can mean a relationship that is platonic. It can mean a work relationship, etc., where we're mm-hmm. looking back on the past and only picking the positive things to focus on and getting stuck in that cycle of, oh, it was the best. Oh, this was a good pairing. And it's like, well, yeah, your partner gave you flowers every Friday, but that's because they were apologizing for something. You know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. like, where is the but here? Mm-hmm. And so it's just something to think about and to hopefully, again, take a step back and look at the full picture.
Exactly. Yeah. No rose-colored glasses, everybody.
None, please.
So we just wanted to warn you guys again that going into the next section that we do go over some trigger warning type stuff and just essay and some violence. But, you know, fast forward if you need to, but definitely be cautious heading forward.
So, like I said earlier in this episode, we are joined by a guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself today for us?
Hi, my name is Samantha Weisberg. I teach literature and mythology and creative writing. I've been teaching for around 17 years.
Wow, oh, I didn't know it'd been that long. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So we thought that we would bring Sam on today to talk with us about like misunderstandings, misconceptions, I guess is probably a better way to word that, in mm-hmm. mythology. And you wanted to talk about Medusa, right? So like, let's just get right into it, shall we?
Cool. Yeah, for sure. My idea is to talk about the story being lost in translation, and just because it's been retold so many times mm-hmm. and there's so many different sources that each time the story is told, it either gains a new aspect or loses something important. Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about Medusa in the modern world and how her existence is reinventing that proto-feminist archetype that we so need right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the main point is, how does the retelling of myths impact our readers, or impact its readers psychologically? How important is the original narrative of a story? And by mm-hmm. altering it, does that take away from its original or intended meaning or lesson?
Yeah, so, especially when you talk about something like Medusa, that's what, like a 3,000-4,000 year old story.
Yeah,
there's a lot that can get muddied in the waters.
Yeah, even like yeah. stories like with Persephone and stuff like that. Like, obviously, you know, like there was a lot of social stuff going on with that time, like keeping women in the home and stuff like that. So we saw a lot of that in the original telling. So.
Yeah. Adrienne Rich, poet and writer, she talks about like revising and the retelling of stories as mm-hmm. the act of looking back, of seeing with fresh eyes, and entering an old text from a new critical direction. And part of me absolutely loves that, loves the mm-hmm. concept of retelling in order to benefit a people, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes we're watching a movie or we read a story and we're like, that never happened, right? And we might get upset. Like, remember, I don't know, are you Lord of the Rings fans?
Obviously.
A little bit.
Okay. So for example, or like Hobbit fans, watching the movie, I was cursing every 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it didn't happen that way. That ruins Bilbo's hero's journey. This is supposed to happen. Gandalf is supposed to save them from the trolls. He's not supposed to go there yet. He's not there in his journey yet, you know, and I'm furious, right?
Right.
So there's this like retelling of this story that ruins the hero's journey. Now, in other aspects, like Medusa, she has transformed from, well, in Ovid's version, she's a victim of sexual mm-hmm. assault. And she just, man, gets the shit end of the stick, seriously. Right. But mm-hmm. now in our modern culture, she's this symbol of protection, of rage, of healing, of regeneration, of mm-hmm. rebirth. And I think without this critical lens and without this continuous retelling, we wouldn't really achieve that. We wouldn't have achieved that.
Totally. And yeah, I think that in general, like generally speaking, you can see this sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Redefinition of stories happen throughout history. And I think that the most commonly understood version of that is the Bible. I mean, how many times has it been retranslated? And even by non-political, non-social things happening that we kind of wanted the narrative to be switched, things get missed in translation. I mean, it was originally written in a dead language.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And now Medusa's like this, like really, like people think that she's evil and stuff like that. And they don't like know all this backstory of like what made her so angry in the first place.
Well, and especially when you take things like, like the Medusa story, like the Bible, like all these just ancient stories, right? We today in modern times lack the nuances of being alive in that period and the sort of cultural or social, you know, just everyday little tiny nuances that we will never understand because we simply are not alive in the ancient Greece.
mm-hmm. True. Also, we would have been treated very poorly in ancient Greece as it was a patriarchal society.
Exactly.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been fun for us at all.
Especially in Athens, where like most of the philosophers were during that time. So
yeah. And if you actually like read some of the philosophy stuff, like actually read some ancient philosophers' texts, it's a little like, oh yikes. Yeah. and I think actually the philosophy is such a great way to have that kind of little insight for things that were going on socially in period, like in those periods of time, to give you maybe a little bit more insight towards things like mythology mm-hmm. and like the metaphors and the social lessons that are trying to be taught and all these sort of things. don't know. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful for like contemporaries like Miriam Dexter Roberts, who, you know, has this female perception of how to analyze these myths in terms of, you know, coming back around the other side and showing, you know, the female in this beautiful, wonderful, healing light. Mm-hmm. Whereas like before we had what, Freud, who believed everything was fear of castration, and Jung, not to say Jung, you know, was misogynist. I mean, he was misogynistic, but I mean, without Jung, we wouldn't have been able to come up with the collective unconscious and all these wonderful, you know, things. So as great as he was still a male. What I'm saying is we're so lucky to have these contemporary analysts that help us see the myths in this new light, in this, you know, way.
And I think that it is such a great reflection of perception per person as well. You know, it's that kind of the conversation of the spider and the fly, right? You have two different people telling the same story, but from vastly different perspectives. Sometimes one perspective gets overshadowed or overshadows the other one massively, that we kind of forget that exists, you know what I mean? Yeah. And can be uplifting or positive, etc.
And there's so many times in a class I'll be teaching where I tell the story of Perseus, and there's always at least one student who raises their hand and they're like, that's not how it went. It went like this. And it's like, I understand, but do you know how many times this story has been retold? So there are chances that you may have heard Bullfinch's mythology tale of Perseus, as opposed to Hesiod's tale or Ovid's tale or Apollodorus or Pindar. You know, there's so many versions.
Right. So if somebody was like trying to get into mythology and kind of seeing things from a more well-rounded perspective, what direction would you point them into for like maybe books to start off on, or even just different perspectives that they can kind of have a stepping stone to see a more well-rounded perspective of these common misunderstandings?
I started out reading Edith Hamilton's mythology at a very like early age, and that was my, I guess, door into the whole world of the myths. She goes into Greek myths, she goes into Roman myths, and she goes into Norse myths towards the end of the story. So you kind of get like a really well-rounded introduction to a lot of these myths. Again, there's articles that you can read about specific stories and their true origins. Like Joe Roberts has a great article about Medusa, and she cites tons of sources. She mentions this archaeologist that I want to talk about a little bit later. I mentioned her previously, Miriam Dexter Roberts. She was the one who did this huge discovery of these female figurines, Indo-European female figurines, that prove that we lived in a matriarchal society, that we worshipped the great goddess, that we used horticulture instead of agriculture. We didn't have weapons. There was no war, right? So in this matriarchal society, it was peaceful. Right. And it wasn't until we had a matriarchal society that war started, that the ego became a thing, that we had to fight each other and yada, yada, yada. Like, you know, so just reading about, I guess, history and like learning where our history comes from in terms of how we switched. Right. The goddess was once worshipped, loved, yes, feared. There was the whole concept of life, death, and rebirth. You know, there's the womb, the concept of tomb to the womb, where you die and then you're reborn again, which happens to Medusa, right? She literally gets her head cut off. She dies. From her neck spring Pegasus and Chrysaor, her two sons, because that Poseidon impregnated her with. So her body, she dies, yet her head regenerates and is still as powerful in death as in life, because Perseus takes initiative, takes her mm-hmm. head, and she wasn't a murderer before. When you look at her, you turn to stone. She doesn't intentionally look at you. It's when you gaze upon her. And what Perseus did is he took mm-hmm. her head and used it to his advantage to kill his enemies. Right. Does that make sense?
He made her a weapon.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. She was never a murderer. She was cursed. First, she was raped. Then she was cursed by Athena. Then she was murdered. Mm-hmm. Like, she was a victim three times, right? Nobody talks about this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think that the talking about it also requires the conversation on, not the conversation, but a viewpoint on the greater conversation about kind of how we view women in society and mm-hmm. if something's their fault or not. I mean, think about how many women get sexually assaulted and the immediate question is, what was she wearing? What was she doing out there? Why was she in this area, et cetera, et cetera? And it's always the victim's fault somehow, how they tempted this upon themselves.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And so I think that that's probably a really big part of the conversation, is because it requires society to have this moment of self-reflection that perhaps the way we talk about people is not awesome.
Well, it's not just that, but it's also like, even back then, it's, you know, easier to blame the victim than it is to blame what happened in the first place.
Literally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also important to note that Athena, a female goddess, cursed her. Mm-hmm. And this is my theory. I feel like a lot of people feel this way. Athena was born from Zeus's mind. Mm-hmm. Right. Hephaestus had a headache. Hephaestus split open Zeus's head and out pops Athena, full garb. She wasn't born of a woman. She mm-hmm. was born of an idea. So the brain, the ego. So she has this masculine, like, she's more masculine than feminine. Mm-hmm. And she even says in a text, one of the plays, I think by Aeschylus, that she favors man over women. This is her admission. So here is a very extremely masculine female who supports men, period.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this could be the reason why, as you know, these male authors are creating this, I guess, in their mind, the perfect mm-hmm. woman who is actually a male.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's really interesting. I've never actually thought about things like that. And when you bring that up, it is really interesting how we have this story of, I don't know, like her being born of an idea. I never thought of it like that. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. She wasn't born from a mother. She was born from her father.
Mm-hmm.
His thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about that before.
Right. So this could be, you know, why Medusa was cursed. But also, can we talk about Hesiod and how in Hesiod, there is no mention of Athena. There is no mention of consent or assault. Hmm. Like in the very first mention of Medusa that we have on record, this mm-hmm. is 700 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
The excerpt is, "With her lay the dark-haired one in a soft meadow amid spring flowers." So in that one phrase, with her, with Medusa, lay mm-hmm. Poseidon in a soft meadow amid spring flowers, there's no mention of her being a priestess of Athena. There's no mm-hmm, mention right. of, again, consent or assault. Now, right. this doesn't mm-hmm. mean that it wasn't in the original story, but it isn't right. mentioned in this specific telling.
Right. Mm-hmm. And starting with it being removed that far along, and then you have these 3,000 years gap.
Right.
Well, I'm obviously rounding up, but you have this 3,000 year gap. We now have all this other time for things to be more muddied, more convoluted, removing social nuances and context, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We now have what we know as Medusa's, this evil tyrannical woman who was a murderess.
Right. And then, so this was Ovid in 8 CE in Rome. So think about how much time had to pass before Athena was a victim or before the narrative was changed.
Well, I mean, even just if you take it into a modern concept, we 700 years pass, right? That puts us at 1300. And what, like, just take the social constructs, the social everything that has changed in that time period.
Right.
This is like a conversation of the quote modern world being included in that. So, oh my goodness, I couldn't even imagine.
I definitely think, like, especially for some of the Greek stories, like especially taking in account the, you know, as you said, like the patriarchy things like happening, like some stories did have to be like, I know, like, you know, female philosophers went back and looked at like stories like with Persephone and was like, well, if you literally see like she, you know, when choosing the Narcissus flower was in fact choosing herself, like, you know, and things like that. But I don't know. I just think, you know, sometimes we do kind of have to change it around a little bit depending, because, you know, Greek philosophers were mostly men. And so you kind of have to like take that in account of that and the politics going on during that time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It all feels like politics in a lot of ways, right? At the end of the day, patriarchy is politics.
It's
politics of men versus women. That's all it is, power, right? And that's all politics is a battle of power.
Let's not even mention what they did to, like, Pan and stuff and how they used Pan to further, like, certain political stuff happening during that time.
Okay, let's talk about Perseus. I want to retell the story of Perseus.
Yes.
So originally he's seen as this hero, right? He's this, you know, he goes on this journey and he's so smart and he outsmarts the, you know, the gray eye and he, you know, gets all these gifts from the gods who honor him. And then he slays the monster and then he uses the head to, you know, kill all of his enemies, gets to marry this beautiful woman tied to a rock being sacrificed to a sea monster, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's just, he invents this whole cult and yada, yada. The truth is, in my opinion, is that he first of all, he's an only child. He was born, okay, this is my theory. He was born in a locked tower. Some people say an underground chamber for the first 3 to 4 years of his life with just his mother. Okay. So he had nobody to talk to besides his mother. And then some sources say there was a nanny with them. But his mother, Danae, was impregnated by Zeus, by the sunbeam coming through the light. And then she had Perseus for 3 to 4 years. It was just the two of them, right? Mm-hmm. So then as soon as the king finds out that she is pregnant and she's like, no, it's from Zeus, he, you know, doesn't believe her, puts both of them in a crate and pushes them out to sea. Now, the reason why he's doing this is because an oracle told him that his grandson would overthrow him. So he's, you know, really believing in this oracle and tries everything he can to get rid of Perseus. Perseus is raised on an island by Dictys, and the king of the island is Polydectes. Polydectes is in love with Danae, his mother, and in order to win his mother, he tries to get rid of Perseus, sending him on a quest, right? Mm-hmm. He sends him on a quest for Medusa's head. No one's been able to do it. So here's the thing. Only child, right?
Mm-hmm.
No concept of what a hero is. He has aid from 4 gods. Okay.
Yeah.
He can't do it alone. He has Athena. Athena gives him a shield. He has Hades' cap of darkness, which makes him invisible. He has Hermes' sandals that make him fly. And he has the sword that was forged by Hephaestus, the sickle, to cut off Medusa's head. He would not be able to do any of this without the help of these gods. right? He's just this little baby who's a spoiled brat who has to do this test because he's being, you know, oh, I bet you can't get Medusa's head. Oh, yeah, well, I'll prove you wrong, you know? But, and then there's all these goddesses that are in gods who help him. Like, he, and also, he can't even like fight her head on. He uses the shield to look at her reflection. Hold on, while she's asleep. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's not even awake. She is in her unconscious dream state. Right. So she is like, you know, out cold. And he just comes running with his aid from the god and fucking murders her in cold blood. Mm-hmm. And not only that, uses her head as an object. Like, yeah. He's like making fun of her. Right. Mm-hmm. And she is the power. She holds all the power here. Mm-hmm. And, right. He would be nothing without her, without the gods, period. So just wanted to retell that story real quick.
No, but I think that's a really good point, because as soon as we kind of have this perspective shift on who she is as a person, right, it changes everything. Like, if it's an entire domino effect of perspective, and I don't know whether or not this man is truly a hero or not, right? Because mm-hmm. before you kind of have this, when you think she's this evil, horrible monster, the gods helping him is like, well, you're destined for this. You like, right. He's still the good guy, no matter what. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it just, which it shifts everything.
Yeah. And that's like totally like still this time, like what makes a hero, and people yeah. who do look at heroes now, like some heroes do like really bad stuff, which really they should be considered heroes stuff. For.
Really fucked up stuff.
Like, exactly.
I mean, it, exactly. You put it into the modern times, right? You have the American complex of bringing democracy to the world and what that looks like.
Yeah, and like bringing down, you know, like the queer community and stuff like yeah. that. And people like really do like look up to these people who are like very against all that and like, oh, that's a hero. No, they're not. No, they're not.
That's right. Yeah, it's just one of those things where I think that it's kind of like I said, going back to the spider and the fly analogy, right? It's all about a matter of perspective. And when you have these other perspectives that are spoken up more and brought to light, et cetera, it really mm-hmm. shifts things, right? It shifts your perspective and how you think of kind of everything in context, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, now look at the symbol of Medusa. She's turned into this beautiful symbol of protection. Like, I have her, I have Caravaggio's Medusa on the back of my denim jacket. Mm-hmm. We all wear snakes, right? Yeah. There's this incredible symbol of snakes as regeneration. There's also the fact that Medusa had wings.
Mm-hmm.
There's this connection to, like, the heavens, to yeah. angels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have this whole, like, I don't know, this beautiful figure that is ascension and also descension and life, death, and rebirth and protection. I mean, this is like mm-hmm. the perfect apotropaic symbol, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention, didn't she also had like two sisters? So like, yeah. it's the whole triplicity of things, yeah. like, that you find in a lot of myths like this, especially, you know, with women.
Right. Steno and Euryale were her two sisters, but they mm-hmm. were immortal.
Mm-hmm. Not her, though.
So they, like, think about them being immortal and having to live forever and watching your mortal sister die.
Mm-hmm.
And just living with that grief for your entire, I mean, continuous life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so yeah. sad. But really, if we think about it, most of the myths are quite sad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Because
you don't get morals without tragedy.
Right. Exactly. And then there's also the fact that Perseus gives Athena the head when he's done with it. It's like, all right, well, I'm done now. Here, take it. And she puts it on her shield, right? She embeds it in her shield.
Yeah.
So whenever we see a figure of Athena, we always see that symbol of the Gorgon there with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It kind of turns her into, like, there's this duality as well, you know, with this Athena and Medusa side by side.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah. I'm really glad that, like, especially now in days we're taking Medusa and using her as like a source of power rather than viewing how like many have viewed her for very long time. So it's very nice to see that, like, her, you know, being used for movements and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I think it's nice. And I think it is important that, not important, I guess that's the wrong word, but it's eye-opening how we as a culture and society are, like, becoming more and more educated, even if we don't go on to higher education, that we kind of gain this knowledge, and with that knowledge comes power, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, I think it's a good domino effect for once.
Yeah, I agree. Medusa is always being reinvented. And it's cool because that she's the symbol of life, death, rebirth. And there's this reinvention constantly happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100%. I
love it. Yeah. Although if you notice in some modern pop culture, she is, you know, the enemy to fight, like the final boss, you know, but I think that, you know, that's just child games.
Yeah. Well, they try, like, you could tell in the most recent, like, Percy Jackson. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but they tried to touch on it and try to make her seem more, like, you know, relatable and more like how we view her. Okay. But they still, like, you know, did her wrong in so many ways, but it's fine.
Right. But also think about Versace. She's like, come on, she's like the main symbol. We see her all the time.
She's the main guy of Versace. Yeah. We see her constantly.
Yeah, it's great.
We'll never escape her, and that's not a bad thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, I think that's all we're going to cover for today. But before we go, if you could please tell our lovely listeners where they can find you, about your classes, all of that stuff, so that way if they are interested in learning more, they can come find you.
I love that. Okay, so I run a website called divinediscourselearning.org if you want to go sign up.
I will put it in the bio.
Cool. And I teach all different types of classes from tarot cards. I love archetypes and I love talking about symbols. So I have like a tarot card class. I have a lot of poetry classes. I have, you know, love lost, the painful stories of mythology where you just lose your loved ones and what that means in terms of like symbols. Just tons of classes on there. I also read tarot cards. You could sign up for a reading with me as well. I live in Salem, Massachusetts. I also teach classes in person in Salem. So if you're interested, you can follow me on Instagram. It's Sammy the Gorgon, which is funny because Gorgon is Medusa. So I'm a spokeswoman for Medusa. So it's Instagram is Sammy the Gorgon, but it's Sammie. And then also Divine Discourse Learning is also my Instagram handle as well.
Perfect. I will link all of that in the bio. But thank you so much for talking about this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for inviting me. I had a lot of fun.
Us too.
Bye.
So, Robin, what is stirring your culture right now?
Well, right now, it's the fact that you forgot you were talking.
I forgot. Okay, listen. Oh, we recorded the other section a few days ago, so I was like, oh, next section. I don't say anything.
Goose. That's okay. Anyway, what's stirring my culture right now is one of my favorite times of year. It's warm spring. We are finally moving away from where I live, where it's snowy, it's icy, it's rainy, it's horrible. And things are starting to warm up, but it's not so warm that I can't wear a light cardigan in the day. Mm-hmm. Or I can't, you know, exist without sweating everywhere and dying.
I'm so jealous. It's already that second bit here.
Well, I will be honest, the end of the day, especially considering the fact that our house is made of metal,
does get a bit
exhausting towards the end of the day, but like being outside is wonderful. So I'm loving that. I'm loving that my kids can run around outside and I don't have to think about it too much. I'm like, yeah, go play outside. Mm-hmm. Get out there. Go jump in muddy puddles, because my eldest did make muddy puddles at a birthday party the other day and they were like splashing in the dirt. It was so cute. Aww. What's the point of being three if you can't splash in muddles, right?
Cute.
Splash in muddles. Oh my gosh. Splash in muddy puddles.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm digging that. I'm great. The strawberries are starting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Ours are not quite ready to eat. Like the ones that are starting to berry, they're still very green.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting there. A couple more days and I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, we actually near our home we have like this bramble of like dewberries. And so cool. I can't believe they're already so like they're ready to eat and they're amazing.
So good.
And we also have wild strawberries. I don't know if you guys have ever seen wild strawberries, but they are shaped like a regular berry and they have like have like little dots all over them. But they're very tasty.
Send me a picture. I want to see what that looks like. Okay. I've never seen one. Yeah. Send me a picture.
Will do.
Yeah. Love it. Warm spring. Thank you. It's the calm before the summer storm.
Oh, no.
So, Maria, what's not stirring your cauldron this week?
Look at you remembering to say it on the ball today.
I'm on the ball. I watched you fumble and I was like, you know what? Let's not do it twice.
Oh, no. Okay. So what is not stirring my cauldron is that. So my wife and I, obviously we go hiking a lot. If you follow me on Instagram and stuff like that, you'll see like I post pictures in my stories all the time of our hikes and on Threads as well. But on one of the hikes that we go to, like there's literally a whole like neighborhood right outside of the hiking trails. And was like, how amazing would that be to be able to just like go from your backyard onto like an amazing hiking trail? Amazing hiking trail. And I was like, and then it just kind of put in perspective like how far away from hiking trails that we are. Because me and my wife, like we talk about not just passion projects, but like activities that, you know, you do just for you. Like my wife obviously has like roller derby. And I have photography, but photography keeps me at home. And mine would be like, I want to go hiking like all the time during the week. Like that would be the dream, but I don't live close enough to like hiking trails. And that's what's not stirring my cauldron, that it's actually a drive to get anywhere to go hiking.
You actually have to go do something like in your car to go do something in nature.
Exactly. And it's not like just short little drives too. Like this is like an average of 45 to an hour trip. And yeah, and it's like, you know, so we try to go like once a week, but it really is not enough. I wish I could do it all the time. I would be like the fittest person ever because I would be out there all the time. Robin will call and be like, so what are you doing? Hiking.
I'm on a hill.
But no, we found this like beautiful trail. It's been really hard to find trails around here that we really like, but we found this one and it's just so stunning, so beautiful. Like even comparatively to like upstate South Carolina and their trails, even up in Paris Mountain, which are stunning in their own right. But this trail that we found is just like chef's kiss. I would do it all the time if it was closer. But yeah, that's what's not stirring my cauldron.
I love it. Well, I don't. If you've just joined us this week, every week we talk about creatives that we are loving right now. This is small businesses, podcasts, books, musicians, just anything that Marie and I think are really cool, is really cool, and that you might vibe with. We are also taking listener submissions. So we do have a third option this month. And if you have somebody that you think is very cool that we should promote, shout them out. Send us a DM. Mm-hmm. Email us, whatever. Just let us know who you think should be promoted. These are not ads. These are just people Maria and I have found that we think are pretty neat. So that being said, Maria, who are you vibing with this week?
Okay. So mine is a shop that I don't know how to pronounce the name of, but I'm going to do my very best. But it is a Jeter, I think.
A Jeter?
A Jeter?
It'll be in the caption.
Yes, it will be. But in their shop, they have like a bunch of like really cute like incense burners, including one of a cottage. And it's just so cute. I love like, I've had my eye on a couple like this that look like houses, and like the incense smoke comes through like the chimney of the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so cute and so perfect, and I really want one. And they even have this bee hive like candle burner, or like in no, it's like those wax burners, and it like sits on top of the hive. And I don't know, I really want it. I'm a big fan, and I want to go like ham in their shop, but I can't. But who are you loving?
So mine is an artist called Polythere. And they take Polly Pockets and they redo the insides, so that way they are like popular characters that we know and love, or from like movies that we know and love. And like, these are like classic Polly Pockets, right? So they mm-hmm. aren't the Polly Pocket clothes that everybody says that they chewed on. I'm too old for that. I didn't chew on Polly Pocket clothes. This is the choking hazard Polly Pockets that we had when we were little. Mm-hmm. And they've been redone to be like really cute things. There's like Kiki's Delivery Service, Cinema Roll, Rainbow Bright, just all these things. And they're so freaking cute. And I want one. And they're little works of art.
They are. Yeah.
They're so cool. They're so stinking cool.
People are so talented.
They are. It's just when you see stuff like this, it's like, what's it like?
What is it like? Because we don't know.
What is it like? Our third option and our listener submitted option actually comes from a Discord member. And this is Blood Moon Botanica. It is important to note that their website does state that they are currently out of stock of everything, but they are refreshing things for June, which is next month. So mm-hmm. if you want to support a small business that is also a botanica, head over to Blood Moon Botanica for next month. It's very cool. It's very cool that they're refreshing everything, and they've sold out. I love that for them.
So very much. Yeah.
Love that for them.
Living the dream.
So great. Yeah. So hopefully they have a shop restock next month and you guys can go and sell them out again. That would be amazing. Thank you all so much for joining us this week. We hope to see you again on Friday, May 24th for our Coffee Talk episode, or on May 31st for the 9th episode of Season 5. You can keep an eye out on our social media or head to our website, coffeeandcauldrons.com, to find out more information and see what we are up to. And don't forget to join us on May 21st for our class with Corey Hutchison on American Folk Magic. This is available to everyone on the Patreon library tier and up, to watch anytime. So if you can't mm-hmm. join us, but you would like to watch it, you can watch it anytime after the class, mm-hmm. or you can head to Eventbrite to join just for that. All of these are on our website or in the links in our bio.
Yeah. And if you join our Patreon, I mean, you get all of our past classes as well, like our tea class, our grimoire making class. I mean, to the brim with different types
of
classes.
Literally to the brim. Mm-hmm.
But additionally, our Patreon Magical Beginnings offers a special 25-minute part 2 episode, a huge library of articles on witchcraft, a Discord community full of fun events and discussions. Like, we have so many events going on now. Like,
so many events.
So good. And
unfortunately, my mind has slipped on two of them and I felt so bad.
And we even have a tier that offers one-on-one conversations with Robin and myself.
Yes. So please, if you are loving our podcast, take a moment to review us whatever streaming service that you are tuning in from, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. YouTube apparently now has a podcasting section on YouTube Music, which we are now on. So you might be tuning in from there. Please take a moment to review us. We really appreciate it. We mm-hmm. love reading your reviews, but even if you just take a moment to rate us with stars, that really helps. A 5-star rating helps us to be seen by others, but mm-hmm. we also appreciate honest reviews. So thank you to everybody who has and everybody who will in the future. We really appreciate you.
And again, this is Coffee and Cauldrons.
with Robin from At a Tired Witch Everywhere.
And Maria at Maria the Arcane just about everywhere.
Maria the Arcane everywhere. This is who I am. She has no idea who she is, guys.
No, I don't. No.
Are you ready?
Yep.
One, two, three.
Bye, witches!
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top 5 products.